And welcome back, TechEd North America 2012 in Orlando, Florida. You have been watching the Learn Windows Azure event as part of our Taste of TechEd. And now we're going to cover, while they take a quick break, next up is Bill Staples, and we are waiting on the arrival of Mark Rusinovich to arrive at the stage. But until then, how's it going, eh?
So I'm filler, thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
That's all it is.
That's exactly anyway, the reason why you're here, is
well,
fill time.
Well, I'm just glad that we're actually here at TechEd. It's like 7,000 plus people are now in this conference. The sheer plethora of geekdom that is in this conference center is insane. It's absolutely insane.
It's mind-blowing. So you've made it here. We're nearly halfway through the day, if not a little bit further. You have any favorite things so far at this TechEd?
Favorite things. Well, for me, obviously, it's going to be Server 2012 and all the goodness that is there. There were some awesome announcements that were made during the keynote with Satya, with good friend Jeff Woolsey up on stage, talking about scalability with Hyper-V, some of the IOPS that we were managing.
They like nearly
three
a million.
Times. Almost a million. But I know the guys that made those demos, Michael Leeworthy and others. It's a big team. The sweat and tears they put in to make those things work is it's so worth the payoff. It's absolutely awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the countdown running up to this, right? I mean, we spent a lot of time, you know, doing the countdown videos.
Yeah.
To walk through here, and people are just legitimately excited.
Yeah.
And I mean, last night we had an opportunity to go hang out with our friends at the crew.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to the crew guys. They were nuts.
Yeah. Oh, it's a huge community of like-minded individuals that are all passionate about technology and doing things with technology. And so being able to come out and just even experience part of that is absolutely awesome. I mean, getting handshakes from people, never met them before. Rick, I want to see your backup hat. You know, it's like people want to see my disaster recovery hat. And just in case anyone wants to know, Howard the Bear is safe and sound in the hotel room. He's all good. He was not injured in the throw that you gave him so cruelly out of my suitcase.
Well, that's all right. Folks, you can tweet us at hashtag CH9Live. We're waiting on the one and only Mark Rusinovich to join us, so get those questions queued up. One question just came in on Twitter for you, Rick. Is the suitcase real?
Is the suitcase real?
Yes.
Well, I have two suitcases, and one suitcase that was real was actually searched by the lovely TSA. I got the... I don't know if someone phoned ahead to basically tell them to watch out for this guy's suitcase because he's got a lot of stuff inside of it or what, but my real suitcase was there. The other suitcase was a little bit of magic and a little bit of space-time continuum alteration with the time fabric to make it work.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But, you know... You brought your power bars.
Yes, and I've already made two new friends with power bars.
Awesome.
I noticed when they were waiting for the keynote. I loaned a power bar to a guy.
All right. Moving right along, as we again, folks, we're live here at TechEd North America, waiting on Mark Rusinovich to join us. But we're gonna continue to fill a little more space. When we were looking at, we were both in the keynote, and then afterwards, now what we did here on the live broadcast is we went to the Learn Windows Azure event. We talked a lot about Windows Azure.
Mm-hmm.
You helped drive a foundation session around Windows Server 2012. Talk a little bit about some of those key points that you guys were talking in that foundation session.
So the foundation session was a fun thing. It's kind of like almost like a miniature kickoff, if you will, to mm-hmm. the rest of the deep dive content you get here at TechEd. And so we were challenged with trying to find just the right amount of stuff to be able to keep people interested and be able to direct them to go off to other locations for more stuff. So we focused on basically scalability and changing game changer with virtualization Hyper-V. Mr. Leeworthy did a very nice IP portability demo, like acquisition or a merger or a hosting company, moving VMs between different site locations, preserving IP addresses. A good friend, Purdue, came in and he did one around IIS scalability, being able to throttle back dynamically and certificate deployment, that sort of stuff with IIS from a server perspective. So basically you got the virtualization, you now have the apps. And then I stepped in with multi-server management, PowerShell, and also Server Manager. And then wrapped it up a bit at the very end, number four, with, discretionary access control. No, dynamic access control. It's dynamic access control.
It's a little bit different.
Yes, but hey, it's using Active Directory, one of my favorite things.
Absolutely.
To be able to control access, not through groups, but through attributes of users and other objects, to be able to say, do they belong and do they have access or do they not have access? Very cool stuff.
With all the folks around here knowing that you are the Windows Server guy and we have the opportunity to talk on the Edge show and talk on the Countdown show, what's the word on the street about this thing, about Windows Server 2012?
Oh, man, it is hot.
Yeah?
It's It's bringing coolness back to the server room to a whole new level. I've already had people talk to me about, hey, can I start to use this in production now? Can I do it? It's like, no. The license and the release candidate is to use it in a lab and test environment to figure out what's going on. It's not to use in production. But our TAP partners and people that are part of the early access program with Microsoft are using it in production, obviously, and we're using it in production as well and getting phenomenal results. And so, again, a lot of the stuff that you need to know about Server 2012, you learn about here. You will be able to learn about it online as well. But if you're getting ready to go for this, if you haven't already started your move from 2003 offwards, you got to get up to more recent releases to be able to get ready for Server 2012. So, good migration story so far. I'm looking forward to it, and can't wait for the content. People are genuinely excited. There's a Twitter in the air, and I don't mean Twitter.
Hey, that's a perfect segue for me to remind everybody that we are just waiting on Mark Zinovich to arrive down here. He just got finished up at the Learn Windows Azure event. Queue your questions. They're starting to queue up. You want to get on this right now, hashtag CH9Live. Rick, I see another one. I see another question up there for
personal
you.
Personal favorite feature.
Well, there's a personal favorite feature. There's one up there before that that's not there. What additional items are you taking to Europe? Well, is there a special Europe pack that you have to take?
Well, for Europe, I think I'm just going to be making sure that I pack extra water because it's a longer flight. I'm not, long flights, you got to walk around, you got to do stuff. So we'll see if we'll be able to do that. But for the most part, I'm going to keep on. I will promise to wash everything before it goes back inside the suitcase.
Before you head back.
I'm actually doing a jump start next week in between the tech eds for Server 2012 free training, in case you're interested. Right after that, I pack up from that. I go back home. I put this clothes back inside the suitcase. And then I think you and I actually are on the same flight, aren't we?
I think we are actually on the same plane.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mark has just arrived. Will join us shortly. I want to talk a little bit. You mentioned the manageability aspects and the PowerShell aspects. Is there something special in the PowerShell stuff that you guys were talking about today that really kind of gets you going?
For me, it's just the sheer plethora of how many new PowerShell commandlets are built in and can do so much. And for me, it's the PowerShell ISE. I mean, if developers, they've had IntelliSense forever inside Visual Studio and different tools like that. For us, it was a very simple matter of, hey, let's put this great IntelliSense capability inside the ISE to help people learn PowerShell. So for me, a guy that's kind of knows PowerShell, can muddle his way around, been scripting for ages, discoverability is all there to be able to figure out how to get those commands done correctly, what you can do, and have them working. So I was demonstrating some very simple stuff like how to manage them, how to add some features, had some features remotely, and then because I just decided to do it on the fly, I said, you know what? Let's actually remove the GUI interface and go back to a command line interface for the server altogether, like a server core, but it's minimum Windows. And I did that instead, so it was all good.
So speaking of removing things,
yes,
Mark's
perfect
here.
Transition.
So you're out, dude.
Good to see you.
Hey, everybody! Again, we are right here live at TechEd 2012 in Orlando, Florida. We're gonna get you right back to the Learn Windows Azure event. Bill Staples' session is coming up soon. I've got Mark Krasinovich here
with
me. How are you, Mark?
Good. How are you?
Thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Thanks for running.
Sure.
I think you've got your water there, we should be set. You winded yet?
It's a huge convention center.
Absolutely, absolutely. Your last session, probably it's one of my favorites, right? Because we talked about Azure Infrastructure as a Service coming out last week. We made that announcement. I've been just waiting by because this thing is just awesome. What is, with Infrastructure as a Service, the first question I want to ask you is, when we started thinking about that, what were some of the challenges that we had to address before we could even move down that path?
Well, the biggest one is that, with any software project that starts out, you've got a set of requirements and you design the platform for those requirements. So Windows Azure started out as greenfield, platform as a service. We're going to create the future that's so bright that people won't be able to ignore it. And what we found was that people had lots of existing apps and components and software that they wanted to bring up into Azure. So over time, we had to tweak the platform to support these things. We added things like startup tasks and admin mode, and the big one, of course, was what people call infrastructure as a service. And the key change there is that it's a persistent virtual machine concept or philosophy, meaning that I can put an app in there, and it can write to its local disks. It can create databases there. I can tweak the registry. And that I expect that even if the hardware fails, that I restart the thing and that those changes all are there.
Right.
And with the platform as a service work, the platform, it has a very different philosophy. It is, these virtual machines are just hosts for stateless applications. They persist their data externally to SQL, you know, SQL Azure database or Windows Azure storage. And they're, none of them really matter as individuals. They matter as a role or an image, but I can shoot virtual machines, the servers can die, and I just reincarnate them. And they don't remember their previous lives, they just start fresh. So what that means is that the platform was designed for that, where there's local caches on the servers. If the server fails, the machine's reincarnated somewhere else, and it doesn't have to remember what was there on the server. It's, you know, no big deal that it's gone. Virtual machines, you don't want that. You want stick data in SQL Server, you expect that even if the server fails, that SQL database is there. So we had to look at that and say, how are we going to do this? There's other cloud providers that have created separate storage services for VMs, for VHDs. And we decided, we looked at that, said we could create a new one, or we've got a great, really extremely scalable, high-performance storage service already. It's called Windows Azure Storage. Maybe we could use that. So that was the biggest change, was to plumb everything underneath to use Windows Azure Storage as the backing for the VHDs rather than the platform as we had. There were also a number of virtual networking technologies that we wanted to bring in too to support some of these applications. So everything from, well, there's UDP server applications that require UDP. Mm-hmm. There's ones that require a custom DNS. So right. I want to bring my own DNS server up into the cloud. And then there's the whole, if we're going to talk about bringing server applications, we're probably talking about enterprises too. Mm-hmm. And enterprises want secure connections between on their corporation networks and the cloud. So we had to add a virtual network gateway technology, which is site-to-site
right.
connectivity through standard VPN devices as well. And so there was a bunch of changes in networking to support really the whole story of bringing server applications up into the cloud.
I want to make sure that the folks understand, this is exciting, right? This is about me being able to take my current enterprise application and running it up in the cloud. What this is not is a PaaS killer, right?
That's right. One of the way that I view it is this is an on-ramp. And in fact, we found talking to our field guys that they would go to companies and they would start to explain Windows Azure. And they'd talk about platform as a service and the scale out and the high availability you get so easily with that model. And these companies would say, that's awesome. My new applications, I definitely want to build that way because it's really going to lower my management overheads. But you've sold me on cloud, too. And I hear everybody's talking about cloud. So I've got a bunch of stuff that I want to put someplace. How can I do that? Or I want to build a cloud service, but I can't modify the app. I want to do it over time. But if it's all or nothing, then I'm stuck. So the way that we view it is as an on-ramp. We call it an on-ramp to the cloud. You take your server applications, you move them up to the cloud. Some of them live out a peaceful existence and you never touch them again, you know, walk off into the sunset.
Right?
Yeah. And then other ones are more key, more critical. Your business is built on them. And so those are the ones you're going to continue to invest in and you want to get more efficient. And those are the ones you're going to go and start to migrate over time to PaaS. And so we're looking at it in the context of how can we ease that path for those apps that want to start that started as IaaS and then moved to PaaS. And so actually at the closing of my session, I show infrastructure as a service application. It's two-tier IaaS SQL Server. Then I take the front ends and with Visual Studio, convert them into a web role, a PaaS role. So now I've got web on the front end, SQL on the back end, migrate the data into SQL Azure, change the connection string, and bam, I've got full PaaS.
You know,
that's a simple case, but that kind of demonstrates where we're going.
Absolutely. I want to make sure that point was absolutely clear.
Definitely, we believe the PaaS is the future.
Sure.
It's just we need an on-ramp.
We've got to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks, we are live, TechEd 2012 in Orlando, right in between the Learn Windows Azure sessions. Tweet your questions to hashtag CH9Life. Mark, we've got some questions up there. So let me ask you, let's start with one of these. How do we sign up for Azure Active Directory? Is it multi-tenant? Let's talk a little bit kind of about the Active Directory aspects. I know I'm going to have some folks here later, but...
Yeah, so Azure Active Directory is actually, it's a rebranding and kind of positioning of what we previously called Access Control Server, which was just an authentication service.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting a directory behind it, one that we've already built for Office 365. So one is the security token service, and then we've got the directory services from O365, those two together, and wham, we've got Azure Active Directory.
Okay.
Obviously, both built from the ground up to be multi-tenant. You know, Office 365 customers all sharing, the same directory infrastructure, but isolated from each other, and ACS saying the same authentication service, but isolated from each other. And so signing up for it, for the what the whole thing rebranded at Windows Azure Active Directories, basically go sign up for the service as you would in the past.
As you would
nothing,
normally.
Yeah, nothing
okay.
will change.
No, nothing, okay, yeah. Just changing around.
Yep.
Tourism Geek says, asks the question, can I move between VM sizes? In other words, I've got an extra small VM. A week later, I figure out, I need a little more power than that. Can I go up to a small instance?
Absolutely. You can go up and down. It's basically you're changing the configuration of the VM. So you apply the new configuration, say I want a large instead of a small, and the platform's going to go shut down the VM, then start it up again in a larger VM. So you can do that whenever.
Okay, so but you do need to restart, or is it kind of seamless?
It's actually so it's kind of interesting because you can change the configuration through PowerShell scripts.
Yes.
You can change the configuration in the portal as well, and in the future you'll be able to actually there's a model underneath just like there is for PaaS. There's a what we call a service model. Mm-hmm. All this information is actually specified declaratively.
Right.
So you can just go in. We'll be able to go into that and then deploy the new service model as well, to say here's the new size that I want for this.
There's a lot of questions, and I've seen this. People are, they love this, mm-hmm. you know, and there's been a ton of questions. Scott Guthrie was down here earlier. They were coming in hot and heavy around, man, how do I get a hold of this? Well, how do I sign up now?
Yeah, so this is a preview. And so what we wanted to do is this kind of a V1 release, and we want to make sure that we have everything right. So we gated the subscriptions. We had a certain number of subscriptions we allow. Right now, there's no waiting line, at least of us a couple hours ago. We released more subscriptions as we're getting more confident in what's going on. Everything's looking green, so we're letting more people in now. So if somebody wants to have access to it, they should be able to get it right now.
Just go manage WindowsAzure.com
and
ask for a request there. Yeah. I want to go into the data centers a little bit and talk about the data centers. I asked a question early on about having to rethink things, and you mentioned, look, we designed this originally for platform as a service. I love the fact when I sit down and talk to you, because we can get down in nitty gritty and talk about the internals of the data center. We have to make pretty significant changes there when we decided, hey, look, we're now going to be caching or maintaining VMs.
Actually not, and this was one of the benefits of using Windows Azure Storage underneath, because Windows Azure Storage, that's the foundational storage service for the whole platform. It's got to be ultra reliable. So the data is replicated across multiple disks within a data center. It's also geo-replicated asynchronously across regions, data centers in different regions. And so we that was actually just one of the many advantages we saw of just saying we're going to put our VMs there, because we've already done all the engineering work to make that thing incredibly resilient, and we just take advantage of it for free with our virtual machines.
That geo-replication.
Yeah.
There, now, I've been watching Twitter since your keynote presentation. Yeah. One of the comments, I'm going to be honest, I don't know who it was, actually said, no customer, and we had Affleck up on stage, no customer is going to put their stuff in a single data center.
Yeah.
And I think that's key. You get that multiple data center replication.
Yeah, this is a place where we're going to be making more advancements. I mean, we've got technologies today like Windows Azure Traffic Manager, where you basically set up, you know, a failover or something that where you want customer requests to go based on locality or just spraying across different deployments of the application in different data centers, completely different applications. So you go deploy them, and then you layer an IP address on top of them that then DNS services then will go and spray across those. So that's great for failover, and that's also great for locality kind of scenarios. But it requires a lot of manual effort. So we want to make it in the future where we make it very easy, and again, we'll probably be focusing on PaaS because that's where you get some of these advantages, to say, I want this cloud service, it's going to be geoscale, and I want it in these different regions. And here, I want it triple replicated, the storage underneath it automatically across the data centers. I want these kinds of data synchronously replicated. This can go async with this kind of, you know, time to replication characteristics. So this is kind of a journey that we're on. We're just started to make it, you know, the platform do a lot of the things for you that you don't have, you know, to make your life easier creating those kinds of things.
Sure. Now, this question, I don't know if this is one that you can ask, but we've seen it probably four or five times just over the course of the day, this rumor of SSD disks.
Yes. Yeah, we actually, so I think this was Ars Technica. I saw the article that said Windows Azure is on a SSD as part of this Windows Azure release on June 7th. And, That's true to an extent. We do have SSDs in Windows Azure Storage. They serve as caches on the front end and also where the journal is written to. You know, so it's a journaling storage service. And then there's massive spinning disks behind them, you know, many, many large spinning disks behind them. It's just not economical to run at that kind of scale with SSDs.
Sure.
But we do get the advantages of high IOPS from the SSDs on the front ends.
There's another question from Jeff. Jeff Moja, any plan to have highly scalable DNS Azure offering similar to some of the other folks that are out there in the
process? Yeah, I can't give a time frame, but if you think of anything that you'd like to see in virtual networking in Windows Azure, we've almost certainly already identified it, and it's already part of a plan, either short-term or medium-term kind of plan. So I can't give you a date on when you're going to see DNS services. In fact, we do have a subset of the DNS services support in this release. We've got the Windows Azure provided DNS now for cloud service. So you automatically get DNS services for a cloud service. In other words, if I deploy two virtual machines in a cloud service, we recognize that in the PaaS world, we can use runtime APIs for machines to look each other up. They call the platform, they say, what's the IP address of that guy over there, you know, role instance one in the worker role tier. But for these server applications, they're used to looking at each other up by DNS names. They'll say, I want to talk to SQL underscore instance one, right? And so we need new, as part of this virtual machine support, we needed to bring in DNS services. And so when you have a cloud service, there is this, you know, a DNS server that is kind of multi-tenant DNS server for that cloud service. And so the machines can all look each other up by DNS name. And now the next steps are taking that and making it, expanding it out, attaching it to virtual networks where you can take multiple cloud services and put them in the same DNS namespace, and wiring that up with Traffic Manager to get the DNS services across data centers. And so, yeah, we're on that path as well.
So, folks, we are, again, live just waiting on the Learn Windows Azure event to start. Bill Staples is up next. We've got about 4 minutes left. I've got too many questions. You mind coming back?
Sure,
you
I'd love
jump?
To.
You know what? We're going to make a call right now. Yeah. Mark's coming back right after Bill's session, so get those questions queued up. Hashtag CH9Live. I also want to talk to you about a few things outside of Azure, but we'll get to that when we get there. We've got just a few more minutes left. A couple more questions have queued up. Are Azure VMs going to be the preferred way to configure and run things in Azure for
new and
old applications?
Well, I think the preference depends on what you're trying to do. If it's you're creating a new app from scratch and the capabilities of our platform as a service services meet your needs, for example, does SQL Azure meet the needs of your structured storage? Then the preference is going to be to go with what the platform is really optimized for and what makes your life easier. And so that's going to be platform as a service. Now, if you've got an application that requires capability or features that are today aren't in SQL Azure but only in SQL Server, if you've got, and so for example, if you want to build an application on top of SharePoint, as we saw, you know, then you're kind of guided by the requirements. It's not like I'm going to go to the platform and say, is it IaaS or PaaS that I want to pick? It's really, what am I trying to do? And if all things are equal, I'm going to go the PaaS route because that makes everybody, you know, my life easier and I save money. But so that's
at the end of the day, it's Azure, right?
That's right. It's the end of the day, it's Azure.
Okay. A couple more minutes. One of the things that I saw in the keynote that really excites me, you know, I'm an old IT guy. Sure. I'm used to breathing all the stale air and these great big huge data centers and everything. One of the demos that we showed is you showed taking an existing virtual machine, running an infrastructure, used app controller, up into the cloud.
Yeah.
And it seemed pretty seamless and easy. One of the things that you also kind of showed that I don't know people really caught, once it's up there, it's not stuck.
Yeah. No, I think that's a differentiator that we've got too. Again, we just get that benefit right up front free because we use Windows Azure Storage. So you put these things in storage blobs and now you hit them with the storage APIs just the way that you would with your other storage assets.
All the other things that I have up there.
All the things that I have up there. So you saw me in Cloud Explorer just take it and basically just copy and paste it back.
And drop it all down and you're good to go. Yep. So no lock in there.
And there was that was off the shelf tool that knew nothing about virtual machines. Mm-hmm. So just worked with what we've got.
Absolutely, that's awesome. Make sure you queue up your questions for Mark, hashtag CH9Live. We're gonna let him go and catch his breath here in just a moment. One of the other things that I wanted to kind of talk about around VMs, is there some very quick guidance of things when I'm moving my application or moving a VM like we did today?
Yeah.
What are the top one or two things that, hey, look, make sure you know to do this before you go doing it?
Make sure, you know, if you're moving a VM from on-premise up to Windows Azure. Well, Linux machines today require a special agent to work in Windows Azure. We're working with the distribution so that future releases don't require it. It actually turns out that, kind of ironically, Linux isn't as cloud-friendly as Windows when it comes to having hardware change out from underneath it. Windows adapts to it pretty easily, and Linux is like, oh, my NIC is gone, and now, oh, there's a brand new NIC, not that's just a NIC that's replacing the one that was already there when you would migrate a machine. So we've got that to be aware of for migrating Linux machines from on-premise up into the cloud. What's some other ones?
I mean, do I absolutely have to sysprep things? I mean, I'm used to my data center way of things,
yeah,
right?
Well, so the sysprep question, the only reason you need to sysprep is if you're actually going to clone the things.
Okay.
Because it is Hyper-V, and the integration components are built into both Linux distributions as well as Windows, when you put it up there, it's going to recognize the hardware just as it would if you put it on Hyper-V. And so no need to sysprep to get it to do plug-and-play automatically. The virtual machine names, they're in their private DNS space, so they're not going to be conflicting with anything up there, so you don't need to change those. So it's actually pretty straightforward. One thing to be aware of is the difference in caching for the OS disk versus data disks. The OS disks are write-back cached on the server, so it honors, of course, flush and write through back to the storage, back-end storage. So if there was a failure, you're not going to lose anything, just like you wouldn't on reliable storage hardware. But the performance of local spinning disks on the servers has very different performance characteristics than Windows Azure storage. Windows Azure storage does scale out, so it can deliver many more IOPS. It also is a log-based file system, so it's really optimized for random IOs versus local disks pretty much stink at random IOs. And so there's differences there that you should be aware of. We've actually given the defaults so that the OS disk is write-back cached, data disks are not, because SQL performs better against Windows Azure storage than it does with the local cache.
I'm going to stop you there because I want to get into that whole thing and the disk caching stuff, but we got to get everybody who's watching at home back to learn Windows Azure. Enjoy. Mark's coming back, so come back for us, Channel 9 Live, Tech Ed 2012 in Orlando.